Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:55 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 10th. I thought we'd kick off today with gold because it was mildly up, mildly in dollars, pretty much flat against the euro, but up in a significant fashion against the pound because the pound has been breaking down. We're at a really rather interesting place now for the pound because there's a lot of speculation about exactly what's going to happen with Brexit. When we look at the euro versus the pound, it's breaking higher. But we also know that on every other occasion since 2016, these big moves up above 90 cents have not been, or 90p have not been sustained. And each one of those occasions has been characterized by a reversal of the tensions that are brewing with regard to Brexit. But we are coming down to the wire. There are two important points. The first, of course, is that we're coming to the end of the year and the amount of time left to negotiate a deal is running out. Then you also have the electoral calculus in the UK. Boris Johnson doesn't have to call an election anytime soon, and he's got a substantial majority. But if we just think about the various different treaties, there's the Act of the Union, there's the Good Friday Agreement, and then we also have the agreement with the EU. And it looks increasingly like the UK is going to have to break one of them. And if they don't break any of them, well, then they're going to basically give up the right to self-determination and setting their own rules with the EU, or at least give over the responsibility for our power to do that to the EU. So that pretty much means that they're going to have to break one of those sets of treaties. So protecting the Union is integral to the United Kingdom. It's hardly a United Kingdom if they break the Act of Union. So, therefore, that has to be sustained, which pretty much means that the border, it will eventually be around Northern Ireland rather than down the middle of the Irish Sea. But that also implies a hard Brexit. In order to avoid that, there are going to have to be concessions on both sides. It can't simply be the UK making concessions. And that pretty much ensures that the EU has to make some concession. And if they don't, we'll have a hard Brexit. So that's why the pound is weak right now. The big question is whether there is the willingness to make concessions. And particularly in view of the fact that this is still only September, then there's plenty of time for a lot of negotiation to take place without making big concessions, and that suggests that the pound could go down more in the short term before we do get some kind of negotiated settlement. And even then, if we don't get a negotiated settlement, then having a weaker currency is certainly in the UK's interests, because they will then have a free hand to compete and a clear incentive to compete aggressively with the EU. Now, when we then think about what's going on in the stock market, well, the NASDAQ was down rather heavily in here today, and that pretty much countermands the pop on the upside that we had yesterday. It's still holding the 11,000 level, and that is the first area of potential support. Then, generally, we look at the 200-day moving average, but what we can also look at is the 50-day moving average. And when we look at that, then we're going to see that there is clear evidence of the major advancers in the wider market, whether that is gold or the NASDAQ, finding support around the region of the 50-day moving average. The 50-day moving average is an interesting one, because it's most often used during big momentum moves. So we have gold and the NASDAQ both steadying in the region of their respective 50-day moving averages. So is the S&P 500. Now, when you've seen an index pop back above the trend mean, then people look for areas of potential support during any kind of pullback. So we're certainly getting a pullback over the last 5 days. The S&P 500 peaked, at least in the near term, last week. Now it's back in the region of the peak from back in February. That's a natural area where we might anticipate some pause. It's in the region of the 50-day moving average, which tends to be particularly watched by momentum investors. The 50-day moving average, offering support on repeated occasions, generally coincides with a very strong momentum move, and there is absolutely no denying that we've had a big, strong momentum move over the course of the last 6 months. Then there's the 200-day moving average. In order to get to the 200-day moving average, we would have to have a substantial pullback. And so far, the reaction, for example, on the S&P 500 is about the same size as that posted back in June. And if it holds this area of support, we really are in the best of all possible worlds. Now, the big question is whether that is, I think, a realizable potential outcome. When we then think about the Russell 2000, then it's also in the region of both the 50-day and the 200-day moving averages. So we're at a rather interesting juncture in a substantial number of markets. Then if we think about the FANG index, that has been the go-to place for investors to on the one hand, buy the dip during corrective phases, and then on the other, to support in the clear momentum move that's taken place. And it is now also back in the region of the 50-day moving average. So in a best possible scenario, this is going to be an area of support. It might be too much to ask for. When we look at the longer-term charts going back to over the last decade, then we've got these incredibly wide overextensions relative to the 200-day moving average. But the minimum requirement for a deeper corrective phase would be a breaking of the 50-day moving average. So that's where we are right now. Now, I've certainly seen a lot more commentary in terms of this is still an emerging top formation, that we're about to have another big leg on the downside. Those are obviously fears. There were people that were caught really fully invested back in February and March that were blindsided by the size of the decline. And the one thing that they are terrified of now is that we're going to see that happen again. This waiting for the second shoe to drop type of psychology was also evident in 2009 and 10 and 11 and 12, where people were really disbelieving of the recovery. Now, of course, we're at a very different scenario right now because the size of the pullback we had in March was not nearly as large as what we saw in 2008. And the number of sectors that were affected was comparatively smaller on this occasion as well. But I do think that what we're getting is some rotation. So, for example, when we look at Apple's stock, it did spectacularly well. Then it's also pulling back right now. Then we can also think about the fact that this is not the first time that the share has pulled back. In fact, there have been plenty of occasions in which it has pulled back in a violent manner. And the most recent of those was in February, but it also did the same thing in 2018 and even in 2013 and 15 and 16. On each of those occasions, it's found support around the 1,000-day moving average. And there have been occasions in which Apple halved and was still in a big bull market. So it's a volatile stock and liable to experience some additional downside. Then when we think about Amazon, it has been the go-to buy the dip stock over the course of the last decade. And it's also experiencing some pause and consolidation in here right now. It does have a tendency to go through somewhat lengthy corrections. And on each of its corrective phases, it has tended to find support around the 200-day moving average. And that suggests that it could pull back by $700 and still only be in the region of the 200-day moving average. So we've seen a lot of very good news priced into the stay-at-home sector, and now we're starting to see some of the money coming back out. I've also started to see an increasing news about private equity, and it has been the go-to sector for institutional investors. The fact that we have got this extraordinarily low interest rate environment has been the primary factor behind this massive move in the degree of leverage in the system and this huge move we've seen in the technology sector. Growth tends to do well in a low interest rate environment. And then, regardless of whether we're thinking about high yield, when you start thinking about seed capital, venture capital, round A, round B, then you're so far beyond high yield, it's not even worth talking about what kind of risks are being involved. But the one difference, of course, between all of those types of private equity investment and high yield is that you get a price for high yield. It's actively traded. You don't get that for private investments. So I'm posting the body of an email I got today where a very small venture fund 18 months ago is now leveraging up to launch a $100 million fund. When I spoke to them a year, just over 15 months ago, they were looking at raising about 10 million, and they succeeded in doing that. Their first fund was only in the region of about 1.5 million. So in the space of 3 years, they've gone from 1.5 million to ambitions of launching a 100 million fund, and that's extraordinary growth for their business in any way of thinking about it. The companies they're investing in haven't changed that much. But the quantity of money that is being made available, and particularly in view of the fact that long-term rates are extraordinarily low and that the market is being flooded with liquidity, because we don't have a discount rate, then it's impossible to value anything, based upon reasonable measures. And that's a recipe for a bubble. So it's incredibly attractive in on paper to chase these kinds of assets, but it's a bubble in that's forming, and the illiquidity means that it's easy to buy, difficult to sell, which means that the gains will look fantastic on paper, but when you want to, in fact, take money off the table, it becomes progressively more difficult. We're also seeing that an increasingly large number of private companies are looking at listing, Airbnb being one of the big ones. They eschewed going to the market at any point over the last few years. Now that their business has been extraordinarily heavily impacted by the coronavirus, they're looking at an IPO. I even saw that PetSmart is looking at an IPO. And of course, I've also noticed that more than a few of their local locations around where I live are completely gone. So that's another example of private equity investors looking to cash out quick because they are worried about what happens next. Where is the next round of liquidity going to come from? Well, the ECB were speaking in here today. They made some statements about whether they're going to continue to provide additional liquidity. The euro rallied because they didn't talk about trying to jawbone it down, but then it gave up all of the advance. With some pressure coming through on Wall Street, then that has helped to stoke interest in the dollar. Then, when we look at the European indices, while the Euro Stoxx index is still really quite steady and is in the region of its 200-day moving average, one market that really stood out today was Indonesia. It pulled back very sharply and now confirming resistance in the region of the trend mean. This dollar strength has been a factor right across the boards. not in an especially dynamic manner against the emerging markets. But the fact that the coronavirus cases are rising in Europe and that they've had a reasonably lengthy interval between when they went down and when they've started to rise again, there is some fear being expressed that this may be a second wave. I rather think that considering that we're now in the 10th of September, it makes sense that we would probably see some cases starting to rise. The fact that the number of cases in Spain has rebounded back up to where they were in March, it's really not all that surprising. There are a lot of people who were desperate to take a vacation, and they took them. And particularly for businesses that are wholly dependent on the tourist season in the summer, they had no choice but to open, and probably flouted social distancing norms. So that's why we've had an increasing number of cases. But the other side of this response is that the number of deaths from coronavirus has been continuing to decline. There are probably a number of different real reasons for that. Perhaps the first is that people can't die twice from it. And the people that were most susceptible and most at risk are probably the ones that died first. So the longer a virus continues, it's more difficult for the death rate to continue because the people that are most at risk are dead already. And that's perhaps a macabre way of thinking about it, but what it does suggest is that the number of cases rising is generally among the younger population, and they have, from the beginning, been highlighted as being comparatively less affected. I was speaking with my sister yesterday. Her husband is a nurse, or a senior nurse, at an elderly care living facility. And they've had two cases in the home. Nobody died from it. Then they went through and they tested everyone. There were five members of staff who had it and had absolutely no symptoms whatsoever. So obviously they were quarantined and sent home. But other than that, they've been functioning perfectly well for the last 6 months. And her kids went off for their first day of school just in the last few days. We're still locked down with my kids, still doing a significant amount of work online with really reduced hours. And then, of course, we have the fact that I was speaking with somebody yesterday who is an administrator at a hospital, saying that the number of cases that they're looking at has collapsed over the last 2 weeks. So we're definitely seeing ebb and flow in terms of cases, but the number of deaths relating to coronavirus has in fact contracted meaningfully. Now, that's extremely positive news for emerging markets. But we're still in a corrective phase for Wall Street, and that is sucking dollars out of the system. When we see the end of this corrective phase, then it's going to represent an additional piece of information for global investors. People will become more alert to the changing environment, and then we'll start to think about growth and renewed interest in growth opportunities for next year. China is rapidly accruing significant stockpiles of just about all industrial resources. That's been one of the primary reasons why we've had a significant jump in terms of industrial metal prices over the last 6 months. The Baltic Dry Index has not yet pushed through 2000, and it was in weaker territory in here today. I think perhaps one of the primary reasons why we had weakness in stocks today was because the number of layoffs and unemployment claims in the USA is remaining stubbornly high. But the real reason for that is because the there's an increasing number of people that were characterized as being temporarily laid off are now becoming permanently laid off. And that is doesn't really mean that there are more people that are unemployed, but rather that there's jobs are just not coming back. So there is a real issue with small businesses in particular being run out of business by the lockdowns, and that is going to represent a heavy toll. There's been a lot of discussion about the willingness of the Federal Reserve to continue to provide stimulus, but they haven't been providing stimulus over the course of the last 4 months. The size of the balance sheet has gone exactly sideways. So that does suggest that they are biding their time, that there is ample potential for additional upside. The yield curve spread has been going sideways since March. So while they're saying that there is not yield curve control in place, the market is behaving as if there is. Well, what all this is suggesting is that if we see the 50-day moving averages taken out, it raises the potential that we're going to go back down and test the 200-day moving averages, and that then other markets that failed to get back above their respective trend means will then also have to demonstrate higher reaction lows. The banking sector has been among those that did worst, and it is uniquely inconvenienced by very low interest rates, so it is not going to be among the best performers anyway. But underperforming banks throws a great deal of responsibility back onto the governments, and the thing that will arrest this decline over the last few days would be clear signaling from central banks that they're willing to continue to increase the size of their balance sheets and provide additional stimulative measures. And that also clearly highlights the reliance of the market on liquidity and stimulus. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.